Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Will here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Going back to Peyton Manning and the greatest athlete associated with the state of Tennessee discussion, Ron texting in on the text line. Y'all forgot Big John Henderson and Charles Davis. John Henderson certainly on the list. I don't know that Charles Davis is quite in that territory.
No, great personality.
Right.
You know, great representative, but, you know, a good player. Okay, so Corey Curtis blowing me up today. Corey, you bored? What's up, man? No, I like Corey's text. He's got some great ideas here, like Pac-Man Jones. How about that one? As he said, crazy athlete and person.
Yes.
Just pure athlete, you know.
Sure.
All right, here's one. Rich Froning for CrossFit. Also strength coach at Tennessee Tech. Truly amazing. I couldn't read all of the text, but I got the basic idea there for you.
Sure.
So you got that whole side of things. You got some unbelievable athletes doing that stuff.
Scott in Hendersonville texting in. Pat Summitt, who else won Olympic medals as a player and a coach? Who else changed the game? Now, a lot of that came as a coach, and that's a totally different discussion than what we're having. But
if the discussion is sports figure in Tennessee,
right,
then Pat Summitt.
Maybe at the top of the list. If not, certainly close.
Well, and Ed Temple.
Yeah.
I mean, Pat Summitt and Ed Temple are at the top, and I still would put, like, Wilma Rudolph. I still would put Peyton Manning. But we are talking athlete. You know, I mean, obviously, Pat didn't have the – you know, the opportunities
right
back then. But that's, I mean, she was in Montreal 76. And then, of course, she coached the 84 team. But, if we're counting coaching career, then right at the top of the list.
Absolutely. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe, we had this discussion a little bit earlier in the show surrounding John Robinson and Mike Vrabel as the Titans now head into what I think is certainly their most anticipated season in the last decade. You can make an argument, maybe the most anticipated season they've had in a couple of decades around here in Nashville. It's a lot of excitement. Julio Jones coming in, I think, adds a great deal to that. And things are going to get kicked off for real coming up in week one against Arizona. But as you look at the entire picture, and we'll begin with John Robinson, it was an offseason of a lot of change for this Titans team, especially on the defensive side of the ball, but even offensively. Corey Davis gone, Jonnu Smith gone, you bring in Julio Jones, Josh Reynolds. I mean, there's a lot that's different about this Titans team as they head into this season. How do you kind of evaluate the job that John Robinson has done thus far as Titans general manager? And what do you think's on the line from him in terms of this season, the window to win with this team, and the moves, including some pretty high-dollar investments in some guys, both in free agency and via trade as well? What's on the line for John Robinson as the Titans now move into this year?
Well, he's established himself as a good general manager. He's done a lot to turn this franchise around. A lot of the reasons that this window is in place is – well, I mean, at this point, it's not even a lot. I mean, it's really like he inherited a team that had some really good players and then added to them, and they quickly turned around. He inherited Delanie Walker and Jarrell Casey and Brian Arakpo and even Taylor Lewan. I guess Taylor Lewan would be like the one key player on this team that wasn't brought in by John Robinson. Is that right? I haven't even thought about this before, but I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's Taylor Lewan. Everybody else has been brought in by John Robinson. So the window was created by him. So you have to keep that in mind. But what's at stake is, first of all, if you're a Titans fan or if you're any sports fan and you follow a team.
And I mean, Brett Kerm's here too. But yeah.
Ah, cannot forget Brett Kerm.
That's right.
Cannot forget Brett Kerm. Now, Bo Brinkley is gone now. Ryan Succop is gone now. That's a knock against John Robinson, by the way. But if you're a fan of any team in pro sports – you obviously, and your team stinks and hire a GM and turns it around, that's great. But at some point, you want your GM to go for it. Like if I'm a Colts fan, you know, at some point, I want Chris Ballard to be up against the cap and maybe use a first-round pick on somebody. Go for it. You know, whatever they need to do, find a quarterback, but that's a totally different issue. But, you know, so if you're a Titans fan, again, I'm going to say I like the go-for-it move for Clowney. I like the go-for-it move for Julio Jones. And 10 years from now, I will still like them in the moment. You need them to work out, and if they don't work out, you're not going to get where you want to go. I don't like the Vic Beasley signing. So far, the last couple drafts, I think there's a lot to question. Now, obviously, you have a first-round pick that does nothing for you. But you want your GM to go for it, and he is going for it. So what's at stake is that it works out, and that can they get beyond being a good team? I mean, I guess you could say win the division is another step, but it's still about the postseason. And you'd still rather have a 9-7 season where you have a surprising run than you would a 11-5 season where you go one and done. So what's at stake for him? I keep coming back to the question. I don't. There's nothing at stake like immediately. I mean, at stake for GMs and coaches in the NFL or pro sports is like, is their job at stake? Not even close. But this is certainly the test of whether he can actually get them to that point and whether the going for it pays off. And I think it's also, is he taking too many risks? Is he taking too many risks on injured players? I think that that's certainly worth tracking this year. I mean, right now it's going to take a lot for the 2020 draft class to not be his worst. But he's got a second-round pick and a third-round pick who can still justify those selections this year.
Correct. Well, and also, I mean, you need your 2021 draft class to make an impact for you this year. It's great that Caleb Farley is on the field. Quite frankly, he's on the field sooner than I thought he'd be. So that's a really good sign for the Titans. So hopefully that works out well. You need Dylan Raidens to be a contributor this year. And so far, by all indications, that's not going overly well at training camp. Now, to your point, you can't overreact to stuff like that in the second week of August. There's plenty of time for Raidens to get things figured out. And at least he's on the field, which is a positive step at that position rather than what we talked about last year. But you need guys like Raidens, like Molden. I mean, heck, Des Fitzpatrick, and you select him in the fourth round. Like, you need your draft picks to be able to come in and contribute in some type of way this year. And largely last year, they just didn't. I mean, we talked a lot about Isaiah Wilson, but even Fulton and Evans, they were hurt for a lot of last year as well. Like, you've got to get your draft picks to come in and help you. And they don't even have to play huge roles, but come in and supplement what you already have. Depth is so important in the NFL. And I think one of the things that's overlooked, and you know, they've had this discussion up in Green Bay a lot too when it comes to draft picks. You don't necessarily need your draft picks to come in and give you starting minutes every week. They've got to be able to come in and contribute and add to the depth. And I think that's really important for this group in 2021 as well.
Right. And you're talking Isaiah Wilson and Dylan Raidens back-to-back years, right tackles, a first-round pick and a second-round pick. And you go back to the very first draft for John Robinson, you know, right tackle number 8 overall, Jack Conklin. That was a good pick. But that is a lot at right tackle. Now, you also, when you make picks like that and you're looking at Taylor Lewan's timeline, you may be thinking at some point maybe that guy can go to the other side.
Yep.
Which certainly isn't happening for Isaiah Wilson.
It is not.
And, again, that's early. I'm going to hesitate to, you know, go with what I'm seeing from Dylan Raidens right now and say he could never be that, or he could never be a starting right tackle. No, I mean, it's very early. But that's a second-round pick for a team going for it in this window. That pick has got to be somebody who helps your football team. And maybe he will. Right now, it's not off to a great start.
Christopher on Periscope, is J-Rob the best GM the Titans have had since moving to Nashville?
I think
that conversation is between two people. It's Floyd Reese and John Robinson.
Yeah, and I would go with the GM who built a Super Bowl team.
Yes.
I mean, I look, that's the a Super Bowl team, and a team that not only was it a Super Bowl team 1 year, but for should a
have
stretch,
won next year.
Yeah, I mean, for a stretch of time, was an elite team. I don't think the Titans have not had an elite team yet. I think this one could be. And so then maybe you can start to have that discussion. But right now, I don't think it's an argument.
We'll continue this discussion when we come back and switch the conversation to Mike Vrabel as well. How much is on the line for Vrabel this year? How much of it boils down to the two decisions he's made at the coordinator spots? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Talking Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Frank texting in, this season goes beyond the coach and the GM. The Titans need a new stadium, or at least a massive upgrade. A Super Bowl run would go a long way to get public support behind that effort. What do you think of the idea of a big season this year for the Titans? Maybe means more public support for renovations to the stadium.
Well, I think the renovations are happening. The new stadium is not happening. As far as public support, if you mean public support like, you know, people are going to be willing to chip in, I don't know that a Super Bowl is going to get you enough.
I don't think it's going to change all that much.
No.
It's just my guess.
But I agree that, I mean, I really like the place. The setting can't be beat. I love a real grass field in the NFL. You know, Amy Adams Strunk has mentioned Hard Rock Stadium before.
As a comp.
As a comp.
Yeah.
So, certainly. Some of the, and I, you know, I think some of that is coming. Not sure on the timeline exactly. But there's no question that's been discussed. If Amy, when the owner it says something publicly about something like that, it's been in the works for a while.
That's right. Big League Designs on YouTube. How different a position do you think the Titans would be in right now had they stuck with Mike Mularkey as head coach? And we're going to talk about Mike Vrabel and kind of what he's got on the line for him. But it is interesting. You think back to the beginning of why Mike Vrabel was brought in. I think that factors into the discussion today. Mike Mularkey was here. They got the team to the playoffs, and they won a playoff game for the first time in over a decade at that point. And then you move on from Mike Mularkey. And the expectation at that point with Titan fans were, all right, well, the next coach you bring in, they better be able to take this team to the next level, which Vrabel has shown that he can. They've won a division. They've gotten to an AFC title game in the last 2 years of Vrabel's tenure here. So, I mean, he's done a really good job. How much different do you think the Titans would look like right now had they stuck with Mike Mularkey? I mean, it's difficult to say. I would imagine it would look somewhat different. I don't know that they would have gotten to an AFC title game. I don't know that they wouldn't have. I think those are tough questions to figure out, because my follow-up question would be, like, if Mike Mularkey is still here, is Ryan Tannehill the starting quarterback? Do some of the same personnel decisions that get made get made? I mean, we'll never know the answer to that question.
Yeah, I mean, right. I mean, it's in different staff. I mean, obviously – you went Mularkey had like a legendary DC, and then Vrabel brings in a legendary younger, but still, you know, an all-time DC. They both had that. Terry Rybiski, I think that was a big at OC was a sticking point, and he didn't have a good 2017. Although I thought he had a great 2016, you know, but Mariota was better and healthier. The offensive line was better in 16 than 17. There's always so many factors. If you just transplanted Mularkey into this exact situation, how different would it look? It's a good question. I don't know. They're very, you know, very different personality, I would say, from Vrabel. Vrabel is, I think, a lot more hands-on. And take it away from, like, the injury talk or whatever. I mean, Vrabel's more like player-friendly than media-friendly, whereas Mularkey right. was the other way. But as far as just on-field presence, I mean, there is no question who the head coach of the Titans is. Every day, at all times, there is no question. You know, he's out there running things and always has, like, he has input so often just about offense, defense, you know, he's constantly like teaching. I mean, it's fun to watch, especially if you like F-bombs. I mean, they're they fly. Malarkey was not like that. He's very much more like a CEO kind of approach. Not that he wouldn't coach or you know, bark things out and things like that, but it was a lot more like, you know, everybody's got their areas. Vrabel bounce around different stations and kind of take over for a little bit, you know, stuff like that. I mean, what does that mean in terms of winning on Sundays? I don't know. But I would say that Vrabel, in his much smaller sample size, has been more impressive than Malarkey.
Reminds me of a Christmas story quote. In the heat of the battle, my father wove a tapestry of obscenity that, as far as we know, is still hanging in above Lake Michigan in space.
That's beautiful. Was that when the lamp broke?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a great movie.
No doubt. People who complain about that movie being out all the time, get out of here.
Awesome movie. If you've never seen A Christmas Story, check it out. Coming up this Christmas.
It's on 24 straight hours.
24 consecutive hours.
Is that TBS?
TBS. I think it's on TNT, too. Yeah.
And someone on Twitter inevitably complains about that. Shut up.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Great tradition.
You should watch it and then watch it again instead of complaining on Twitter about it.
So as far as Vrabel is concerned, obviously, and I brought this up with Corey Curtis as well, there's a lot of things that go into your job as a head coach and determining what happens with your team and the success or failure of each individual season. And health is a big part of that. And obviously we can't predict what that's going to look like for the Titans. But just on the surface level of this conversation, how much of the success or failure of the job Mike Vrabel does this year is going to come back to the two hires he made at offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator, officially naming Shane Bowen the defensive coordinator and then staying in-house and bringing in Todd Downing, promoting him from tight ends coach to offensive coordinator. How much of his success or failure simply just boils down to those two decisions on their own and the job that those two do in those roles this year for the Titans?
Yeah, Vrabel obviously took a lot of heat last year, and I think it was warranted for, one, the way that defense played and the way he sort of didn't replace Dean Pease. And we know all since then, keep hearing from Shane Bowen how important it is to have the DC title and to actually be the D coordinator. But that's – now we'll see. It's him. So, okay, Vrabel. Did Vrabel make a good choice? There were some really good names out there on the open market, which means you're bringing in someone with their defense. Vrabel, I think if Vrabel's a head coach of an NFL team, he's probably going to be running his defense. But that also kind of limits you, right? Are you always going to find someone on staff that's ready to do a great job? I don't think you can commit to that, you know, as a permanent policy, but that's what it is right now. And then, of course, Todd Downing, I mean, the last time Vrabel had to replace an OC, he went internal. He promoted the tight ends coach. Everybody said, is that guy good enough? Can he call plays, et cetera, et cetera? Well, he ended up being great. So can that keep working, promoting the tight ends coach to your OC? And this is someone with an actual track record that wasn't all that impressive in 1 year as an OC. So – lot of scrutiny and attention and conversation around those two hires. And that's typical of an NFL head coach. Your coordinator hires are massive.
Yeah, absolutely. This coming from our buddy Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. On Deshaun Watson. Texans have not given up on him being their quarterback this year. They're not taking low ball offers. This is why they aren't being overly communicative, if I could say it, with teams. Barring a strong offer, Texans brass will try to get him back into the fold before the season begins. So Charles throwing it out there that maybe Deshaun Watson not done playing quarterback for the Houston Texans. Do we think that's posturing? Do we think that's positioning for a trade? What do you think is going on there with the latest chapter in the Deshaun Watson saga in Houston, which, by the way, on the field again today in Houston Texans training camp?
It sounds like they're getting all lowball offers.
That sounds what it sounds like. Yes.
That's what it sounds like to me. I can't imagine it actually going that way, but hey, good for them. Good luck to you.
See what happens on that front. There's no way he could be the starting quarterback after all that, right? I mean, he's basically, before all the legal stuff started with him, burning the place down, trying to get out of there, and then you're just going to throw him back out there and be the starter.
And
nothing to see here.
And if you're him, what are you in for that? Like,
right?
Are you even showing up to do that? Like I, yeah. They want better offers, so good try.
Yes,
I mean, at some point, I think they're going to get one.
I would think so at some point. I just don't know how quickly that's going to come, and probably
it's just a weird situation.
Need a little bit more clarity from the league at that point. Real quickly before we move on, Chris in Nashville texting in. If the Titans had not made the Tannehill switch at quarterback, do you think Vrabel was still the coach?
That's a fair question.
I mean, probably not if Marcus is out there slinging the ball around.
Yeah, I mean, you're 2-4. So you're 2-4, and remember, you know, the first year that was all the, okay, you fired the playoff game-winning coach
right, to
bring in someone who's going to do better than that. Okay, well, they didn't make the playoffs. They had a win-and-in game, didn't win it. Mariota was hurt. So there's plenty of, you know, there's plenty of good things from Vrabel, I think, in the first year. But still, the bottom line is, didn't make the playoffs. And so now you go to a 2-4 team with a terrible offense, maybe the worst offense in the league. Quarterback, I mean, where's that season going with Mariota at QB?
Not anywhere good.
I mean, at that point, like Derrick Henry had kind of had his, you know, his revelation the year before, but early in that season, it wasn't going well. Nothing was. So, I don't like, is Vrabel fired at the end of that year if they go like 5-11? I don't know. I mean, it's
probably
only
not.
Second yeah. year, so it's possible that like they figure something out. But I mean, if you're saying if Tannehill's not their quarterback, so the alternative, so the options are Mariota or somebody you draft after that bad year. I mean, I don't know. To the questioner's point, pretty massive franchise
yes.
moment to get Ryan Tannehill for a fourth.
I would say so. Joe Rexroad, you are off today to go to Titans training camp. The officials in the house today as well. So going to be some penalty flags thrown out there today for the Titans in training camp.
So I need Lawan to be out there in teams
right.
and scream at the refs.
That is correct.
I'll let you know if that happens tomorrow.
Absolutely. Joe Rexroad will be back with us 6 a.m. tomorrow for the latest on Titans training camp. We'll be joined by Chase McCabe coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the weekend that was with the Music City Grand Prix. Also get his thoughts on the Titans as well. All that coming up next. Right now, though, got to tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. And baseball returns to its roots on August 12th when New York plays Chicago in the cornfields of Iowa. And you can make the most out of this historic game with FanDuel Sportsbook's $5 Field of Dingers. Just place a $25 bet on a same-game parlay with at least three legs to unlock a $5 bonus for every home run hit during the game. And you can build the parlay your way. Home runs, strikeouts, money line, everything is on the table. So lock in your parlay and be a part of history on August the 12th. And if you haven't tried FanDuel Sportsbook yet, new users can place your first bet risk-free. That's right, new users get up to $1,000 back in site credit if your first bet doesn't win. So just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today and use promo code ROB so they know that we sent you. That promo code is ROB. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. A minimum bet of $25, max bonus of $35. First online real money wager for first risk-free bet. Refund and bonus issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, the great and powerful Chase McCabe with us now here on the program as well. Michelle Knezovic.
Great and powerful. Wow.
Intern Will with us as well. Yeah, I figured that was appropriate after this weekend.
I like that. Thank you.
You know, you're becoming kind of a racing celebrity around here. You know, you get all big time on us with Chasing Checkers, and then you're doing the PA for the NASCAR race. Now you're all over the place for the IndyCar race as well. Just remember the little people.
Oh, I will. There's no doubt about that. I mean, it all started when I was producing Race Night with Darren and Liz.
That's right.
Even though I've been a race fan my whole life, so it was just a natural fit. But, yeah, it's been cool. I kind of, now that it's back in the market, you know, remember the old song, I was country before country, or
That's
when
right.
country wasn't cool?
That's right.
That's kind of how I feel. But cool crowd yesterday, a lot of people out
oh,
there.
Yeah.
And I have walked probably over the weekend 30-something miles, but my knees are feeling it today, but overall it was cool.
Well, we appreciate you being with us today, Chase. And let's start there. I mean, I was interested to see what this looks like because, I mean, I'll admit, I was not overly familiar with all things IndyCar racing heading into this weekend. But I was really interested in what the course would look like and kind of the backdrop of the city. And I'll say, just watching yesterday on the television feed of things, it was awesome to watch kind of the backdrop in place there with Nashville in the background. I thought the city did a great job of putting things together as they normally do. I thought people, for the most part, from people I heard from, had a great time checking out the races. It seemed like just a really cool event, and not only a cool event for your racing fan, but I think your casual sports fan. Like, I had a guy that I'm pretty close with, went down there for that, texted me and said, this is maybe the coolest thing I've ever been to in my entire life. Like, it was awesome to watch on TV.
Yeah, and I think that's what people were, whether they were watching at home or they were actually there, that aren't race fans, were going, wow, this is neat. Like, these guys going 185 miles an hour over the Korean veterans pedestrian, or not pedestrian, but that would have been something.
That would have been real something.
But the Korean veterans
need to
bridge.
Widen that thing a little bit. That,
dodge the people.
Yes.
But, you know, and all the jokes of the pileups and looking like I-24.
Yeah,
and
like a typical day in Nashville traffic.
It did look like Nashville traffic. Let's just call it what it is. But that was the neat part of everybody that wasn't really into racing going, all right, I'll give it a shot. This is something. So that was, you know, and I think the cautions early, you had a feeling out process. And I tried to warn people because, you know, all weekend – you had some spins here and there, but they were spread out. They weren't all starting together. And you stack up 26 cars together in tight turns.
You get some contact along
the
way. Yeah,
and I mean, it really is like the 40-24 split where, you know, you're trying to get over and the big truck's not letting you over and you see a pileup. So that's what it was. But I think overall people really enjoyed it.
Well, I think they did too. And it was cool to see, and I saw them running the practice run starting on Friday of just the transition from kind of the concrete to the asphalt going onto the bridge there of the Korean veterans. It's a little bumpy out there, which was something I think, you know, the drivers were talking about they had to adjust to. It's not like they'd never dealt with, you know, bumpy courses before. It's something that comes with road racing, but it was interesting to see how they navigated that. That's got to be tough on the body as well.
Well, they're all
as you're doing that.
They're all icing down.
I'm sure
today.
They are.
Yeah, they are. The hands especially, and I know some of the drivers were already dealing after practice.
Yeah,
had blisters on their hands just from the wheel moving around. Because I can tell you that I'm obviously never driven an Indy car, but those cars are so sensitive. And Joseph Newgarden's told me this, that the wheel just, you have no, it just bounces around. That's just what it does. And you can hold it as tight as you want, it's still going to bounce around on you just because they're so sensitive to any type of contact. And that was going to be the biggest thing outside of the tight turns and not being on the course, that they knew it was going to be bumpy. It's city streets. So they're not smoothed out and manicured like a normal racetrack would be. They fixed some areas. You know, that was one thing that Chris Parker, the president of the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix, said before, that there were some trouble spots, that, you know, uneven surfaces that they had to smooth out and redo. But overall, I mean, that those are the same streets that people were driving on, you know, late last week. So that they just had to deal with that. But I think overall, that's where you separate the really talented drivers that go through the conditioning and have done this before from everybody else. So you saw it yesterday how that played out.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tim texting in from Lewisburg. I was live there and was sitting in the stands where the first wreck was. I had trees in my view of the Jumbotron, so I only saw the cars when they came past us. The rest of the track was a mystery. After saying all that, this was still one of the coolest events that I have ever been to. So, Tim, having some fun yesterday at the track.
Yeah, and I know some people, listen, it's a street course.
So you're not going to be able to see the whole thing.
Right, it's spread out. It's not like going to the Nashville Super Speedway and you can see the whole track. And so, full disclosure, as big of a race fan as I've never been to a road course. That was the first time that I had ever been to any type of road course or street course. And it is certainly a different view. And even for, like, us in the media, you know, we didn't have like an overhead view that you could really get a good glimpse of the track, but they were using the club level at Nissan Stadium for, you know, like the press box, so to speak, for those calling the race. But yeah, I mean, so I think it's not going to be the perfect view of everything, but I think that was kind of the general consensus that I got from people. I did want to play a clip if we can. Scott Dixon, who finished second, and here's a fun fact about Scott Dixon. He actually won the last three races at the Nashville Super Speedway,
yep,
in IndyCar, which they left there in 2008. But he was asked in post-race availability, you know, people complaining on Twitter, too many cautions, you know, what do they need to do to the track? And this was his answer.
I don't know. Everybody else seemed pretty pumped, man. I don't know if they're just drunk, but they're pretty excited. Yeah, it was a crazy race. You know, maybe driver etiquette needs to be kicked up a bit. I think, you know, there was definitely some regulars that were making the same mistakes and hitting people. So, you know, maybe that needs to be looked at. Or the penalties need to be stronger for when you cause accidents like that. So, I don't know. It's a tricky track. You know, it's really difficult. And you know, especially on restarts with trying to get temperature in the tires and knowing that it was going to be somewhat hard to pass, you know, there was a lot of, you know, people trying to make it happen on restarts. And I totally get that, you know. So, I don't know. It's a balance, right, that you got to try and work out. And maybe next year will be different. I think there's maybe some areas of the track that could change a little bit next year that would create some passing zones and maybe, you know, make the racing a little bit better so there isn't so much emphasis. But, you know, you look at guys like Herter, man, he made the passes happen, you know. So, it can be done cleanly like he did.
So that was Scott Dixon yesterday after the race talking about, I mean, some of it's on the drivers, maybe, yep, driver etiquette, and that was a pretty strong comment he leveled there. But, you know, to his point, this is the first year of the race.
Right.
You can make some adjustments as you continue to move forward with this thing.
Yeah, and the hope is that this is the first of many.
Right.
The initial contract is 3 years, so they're guaranteed two more. My guess is it's going to go beyond that because they're going to take what they did over the course of this weekend and they're going to build on that.
Yep.
I can 100% just – I will guarantee it that track next year is going to look a little different.
Yep.
That's just what you expect. It's a road course. You have that ability. It's not like a permanent course where you can't just change it at the drop of a hat. So they can modify some things. Turn 9 was the trouble corner yesterday. Very, very tight corners. But at the same time, you're going to hear – and, of course, the drivers that finish up front, they're going to say this, but – they like the challenge of it, that it was a very challenging course. But you also have to, you know, I'm learning in IndyCar, there's a lot more gentleman's agreement that, you know, there's some turns that you need to back off a little bit and not try to pass,
yep,
because if you force it, you're going to have a pile up like we saw. So yep. I think they'll look at it. IndyCar is very good about that sort of thing. And 33 laps of caution is what they had yesterday. And I looked this up this morning, that the average this year through 11 races is 15.27 laps of caution.
So doubling up on that.
Yeah, but ironically, it's not the most that they've had. The second race that they had at Texas Motor Speedway, which is an oval, they had 35 laps, okay, of caution. So, and they that's a tough place for them because, yeah, they've actually lost some people,
yeah,
at that track, but they go very, very fast, and so they wreck a lot.
Absolutely. Well, and kind of a tough weekend for Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
Well. The qualifying run didn't go well, and then disqualified early in the race yesterday.
I can't really figure out what – I mean, he is a seven-time NASCAR champion. He's a bona fide Hall of Famer, no doubt about it.
Yep.
And towards the end of his NASCAR career, you could tell that he just lost a step, something. And the Hendrick Motorsports had, you know, gone through some struggles too. I kind of think if he was there this year, he may have found victory lane. But this is just completely different for him. This is something that he hasn't done, a discipline that he hasn't done in his career. And he is very much a rookie in it, and it's showing. So I do wonder, there's talks that next year, because he signed a two-year contract, that he could run some ovals. I think that would be smart for him because he was really good at Indianapolis in his NASCAR career. Nope. Granted, the cars are, yep, different, but he knows the track. He's tested at Homestead, Miami. So there are thoughts that he could run some ovals next year, including the Indy 500, which I think would be good for him. But I just don't know how this is really going to turn out. And he's also said he hasn't closed the door on doing more in NASCAR again. So it's a name. He's handled it all with class. You know, when if he has to get out of the car early or doesn't have a good run, he's taking it with strides. But yeah. I just don't know that this is really going to work.
We'll continue the discussion when we come back, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie Stanley alongside Chase McCabe here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 1025, The Game. Nashville SC fans, join ESPN 94.9 tonight from 7 to 8 p.m. for NSC Backstage, featuring Nashville SC players and coaches. Tonight's guest is the great Walker Zimmerman. Make sure you're tuned in for that. You can watch the show online via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. NSC Backstage brought to you by Camarena Tequila, the official tequila of Nashville SC. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road. Robbie Stanley here with Chase McCabe as well. And Chase, we have a question for you on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tim texting in, I saw when I got home the winner got into a wreck on the fourth lap yesterday, and he was able to stay in the race, and the guy he ran over was out. Can you explain what happened and why he was not able to continue? This question from Tim.
Yeah, it was all about repairing the car. The damage that Marcus Ericsson had, even though he went airborne, he like jumped up in the air. It was just the nose that was essentially broke off, and they have those readily available that they can replace.
Yeah.
And so they were able to replace the nose. There wasn't any other significant damage on the rest of the car, and so he was able to continue. They were able to straighten things back up, and he was able to go again, whereas Sebastian Bourdais, that he hit, had much more damage on the rear wing, which is harder to repair, and so that ended his day. Because if you don't have a rear wing, you're done.
Yeah, I mean, you're just totally up a creek, as they say, at that point. Some news on the Titans front. This is coming from John Glennon in multiple reports. A.J. Brown and Julio Jones not out there as the Titans start practice today. Josh Reynolds is out there. So Reynolds has been out there the last couple of days. Nate Davis and Ben Jones not out there as well for the Titans. So Julio continues to not be out there. A.J. Brown not out there for the second consecutive practice day, which I believe he's scheduled to be on Good Morning Football coming up a little bit later. So I don't imagine that there's anything going on right now with A.J. Brown other than just letting him have a couple days off in training camp here. I think he's displayed so far that training camp, he seems to know what he's doing out there.
Yeah, and you know we've kind of talked about this on our show and Darren Donick and Chase of how concerned are you that these guys aren't practicing? Well, they are going to need to practice some.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, you're eventually going to have to put them out there. However, there's still more than a month until the first game.
Right.
I think we're all a little thrown off by this preseason schedule because the preseason is actually, by my math, starting at the same time. They're just going to have more time in between the last preseason game and the first regular season game.
Correct.
So that will give them time to get on the field and practice. And I would imagine you're going to see some of these guys in the preseason a little bit, probably not a lot. I don't know how much Derrick Henry's going to play. Don't know
he probably
how much.
Need to play all that much.
No, and Julio doesn't either, and AJ really doesn't either. So it's the really what you're looking at is, you know, the guys at the end of the roster that are trying to make the team. And then also you have to build another 16-man practice squad. So which I think is a good rule. That's something that they should keep, in my opinion. And they've done it for the second consecutive year. So I'm not all that concerned about it yet. Now, if Julio Jones and all these guys still aren't practicing the week leading up to the Arizona game, then okay. Then I might be a little concerned.
The Titans have also put out their unofficial depth chart, the first unofficial depth chart that they've put out. They've got Tyson Brailo and Kendall Lamb as the co-starters at right tackle. So a position battle going on there. Tucker McCann listed as the starting kicker at the moment. You'll never guess, but Ryan Tannehill is the starting quarterback. So
I was wondering. It was
got him on there
as
well.
There for a second.
Got Logan Woodside as the number two and Matt Barkley as the number three. So not a ton of surprise there. They do have Jeff Swaim listed as the starter over Anthony Firkser at the tight end position.
Yeah. That's interesting.
I guess that depends on what kind of personnel package you line up in, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that big of a deal, but still interesting. The ones that I was really paying, obviously, A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, your starting receivers, but you know, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is behind A.J. Brown. You have Marcus Johnson, who's had a strong camp. He's behind Julio, so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Behind Julio Jones as well. And again, Julio not out there today. This is it's a really interesting battle at wide receiver because, I mean, Chase, you and I have talked about this. How many times have you been looking around the Titans wide receiver room and thinking to yourself, do they have five? Like, do they have six?
Yeah.
And now you've got legitimately nine guys battling it out. It's kind of a different place to be in. And it also, as these preseason games start to get underway this week against Atlanta, those guys putting actual film out there and tape out there, it's going to be interesting to see how the Titans navigate this. Obviously, you can't keep nine guys.
Yeah.
And then there is talk about him keeping seven now, which I still think is that's a lot of wide receivers to have.
It depends on what they give you on
special
teams.
Depends on what they give you on special teams. But you can't keep all of them.
No.
Can you find a way to maybe slide a couple of them into your practice squad? Do they get snatched up out there? How much of ability do they continue to play the way, like does a Marcus Johnson or does a Chester Rogers, do they continue to play the way in the preseason games that they've played so far in practice? If they do, and that's the story with Cam Batson and some of these other guys as well, it's probably going to be pretty difficult to sneak some of these guys through onto the practice squad at that point.
Yeah, and I mean, right now, and here's one that's surprising and not in a good way. Des Fitzpatrick, I mean, he's way down the depth chart right now.
Absolutely.
And I know that people that have been out there have said he's not had a strong camp. He's a fourth-round pick. You don't want to cut a fourth-round pick. I don't think they're going to cut a fourth-round pick. I know Jared has thrown out the hide him on IR that they could potentially do. But I mean, he's one that you can't sneak him through to the practice squad. He's going to get scooped up. So, sure. But with him not performing, that's going to take a spot from somebody. And they like a Chester Rogers or a Marcus Johnson. I mean, right now I think Marcus Johnson's on this team.
Yeah.
But I also think Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is probably on this team too, just based on what he can do on special teams. So, and then you obviously know the top three that they're going to have in A.J. Brown and Julio Jones and Josh Reynolds. Yep. So I just – they got a tough job. I don't envy them for it, but it's a good problem to have.
Chase, real quickly, what do you got coming up on Darren Donick and Chase today?
Yeah, we got a lot we're going to cover with the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. The CEO, Matt Cruz, is going to join us in the first hour at 10:20 to kind of do a wrap-up of that. Bobby Bowden passing away this weekend. We're going to talk to former Titan Kevin Long, who played for Bowden at Florida State, and then our usual suspects, Vince Ferrara from WNML at noon and Teron Davenport from ESPN at 1 o'clock.
Absolutely. We're looking forward to it. Chase, appreciate you taking time to join me here on the show.
Absolutely. Anytime.
We'll be back tomorrow at 6 a.m. Chase McCabe coming up next. Make sure you're listening to Darren Donick and Chase. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.